In the last episode, it starts off with the prosecution finishing up their questioning first, and then the defense takes over. And in that episode, the jury has just come back into the room. They have just finished watching the silly string video. And the prosecutor starts off by asking Barbara information about what happened in that video. You see Darren and Darlie being interviewed by a reporter, and he asks a question and Darren begins to answer. And then at this point, Darlie says something and then she walks off. And we find out that Darlie left off camera while Darren was being interviewed, and she had actually gone over to Barbara to hug her. Barbara then says that she and her mom had gone to the police and had told the police about this black car that they had seen outside the Routier home. Barbara, we find out, also continued to work at Tessneck for their company after even Darlie was arrested. Now, according to Barbara, she told Darlie that she, Barbara, had gone and spoken to the DA's office, and Darlie had told her not to talk to them. But then Barbara said, hey, I already did. And Darlie said to her, don't talk to them anymore. So at this point, the defense then takes over questioning, and he continues to kind of go along these lines and ask Barbara how many conversations that she had, not only with the investigators, but with the DA's office as well. And she says that there were about six of them. She is then asked if she personally took any notes. She did not, but she said that the investigators, as well as the Rowlett Police Department, did. We also find out that when the Routiers were having their house built, they stayed with Barbara and her daughter in Barbara's apartment. And remember, this is, you know, four additional people in this apartment, Darren, Darlie, and the two younger boys. And they stayed with Barbara for about 3 months. Darren continued to work at Cuplex while he started up his Tessneck business. Barbara evidently was laid off from Cuplex and then did not go straight to work for Darren, but ended up going to work at ATG, where again, she was laid off. And it's at this point that she goes to work for Darren and Darlie at their company, Tessneck. So after the Routiers move into their new home, they and Barbara, they don't spend a whole lot of time together, social time, like they used to. They used to have dinners or something once a week or every 2 weeks, but life started to get pretty busy. When Barbara did come to the house, she talked about how much Darlie loved the kids, not only her own, but the other neighborhood kids who would often be at the house. She would make them sandwiches and give them popsicles and such. Barbara literally could not say enough about how much Darlie just simply loved kids, especially her own, and that she would help with the school for the boys, and she would volunteer. The boys were happy, well-adjusted kids, and Darlie would buy them toys and such, whatever it might be. According to Barbara, she was almost generous to a fault, not only to her kids, but to her friends and to others. And then we find out she was literally so generous that Darlie even let Barbara borrow one of their credit cards and use it to charge things on it because Barbara did not have her own credit card. And then Barbara would then pay her back. Darlie would discipline her boys using usually a timeout. Once in a while, she'd give them a swat on the butt. Sometimes she'd, you know, squeeze their cheeks to get them to pay attention to her when they weren't listening. But Barbara even said it was all done in this loving and caring manner. We also find out that Barbara has a key to the house. And the reason that she has a key to the Routier home was that she was the one who kept an eye on it if they happened to be on vacation. She says that while Darlie was pregnant with Drake, Darlie continued to work at the Tessneck shop. And then she would do this, although not as often, she would do this even after Drake was born. And as far as the bookkeeping goes, Barbara really didn't know what was going on in that regard. Sometimes she would go and make a deposit for the company and just drop it off at the bank. We also find out that Darlie often asked Darren to spend more time with the kids. Barbara was then asked if Darren was working pretty hard at the shop. And she turns around and says, well, not really, which I kind of found a little humorous. Though she does admit that he was on the phone a lot. But we also find out that Darren would show up to work about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and he'd only stay until around 5 o'clock at night. So Mosty then brings up a really brief question as to whether or not Darren and Darlie were faithful to one another. And Barbara adamantly says that, yes, they were at all times. Now, I'm not sure where he's going with this, but I'm sure it's going somewhere. Or, you know, maybe he just did this to cast some doubt with the jury. I don't know. They then get into a detailed conversation about the computer equipment that they work on at Testneck. And it's mentioned quite a few times that the circuit boards are made of fiberglass, which likely will become an important point later on when it comes to evidence. Mosty then tells Barbara to, you know, they literally sit there and talk about all this equipment that Darren and Darlie have purchased for the business itself. And the thing is, this doesn't really match up. They say they buy all this stuff for the company. But then in Barbara's earlier testimony, when she was being questioned by the prosecution, it made it sound as if the equipment that they were using was barely holding on by a thread. And in the meantime, Darlie is continuing to spend money. Mr. Mosty then gets Barbara to admit that, quite frankly, she really didn't know anything at all about the business finances. She only knew what she was told by others. And this does not agree with what she said in the first portion of her testimony, where she talks about Darlie, you know, spending all this money and how she's super concerned about this. But yet we find out that she really has no idea either way as to how the company is doing. She just is simply going by what she overhears. So that's kind of where we ended up now. And at this point, we're going to pick up where we left off. And the questioning of Barbara Jovell is continued by one of Darlie's defense attorneys, Mr. Richard Mosty. Were you upset? Or I guess the question maybe is, did it bother you that Darlie was taking more money out of the business than you were? That is her business. That didn't bother you at all? The only thing that bothered me that I asked Darren, how much more Darlie needs at the house? I need things here because he is charging people for netlist where he is not performing a netlist test, and that is cheating people. When did that conversation take place? When all this happened, that started from the beginning, they were doing that. And I have questioned that, and I've told them that we don't do netlist. But they told me that the customer told them to go ahead and do the golden test and just put down on the paper netlist test. And so I said, we don't do netlist test. We never use that in our tester. And so then apparently he stopped. But then when he wasn't at work, and I had to deal with the customers, I found out that we were supposed to do clamshell test, netlist test. And I said, sir, we don't do that. And he says, well, we have it on paper. And I said, well, I will let you talk to Darren when he comes. So that was never a netlist test performed. So I told him, I said, you can't cheat the customers like that no more. You are cheating them. Excuse me, Ms. Jovell, you said this was from the beginning? Yes. That's talking about 1992, wasn't it? Yes. So those things that you are just now describing, that long conversation until now, was in 19 until the time that I quit. That started in 1992, didn't it? Yes, it did. Okay. That is the only thing that really bothered me, because you will charge for a netlist test. Mr. Mosty at this point says, Excuse me, Your Honor. The court says, ma'am. The witness says, oh, I'm sorry. The court says, that's all right. When Mr. Mosty is through with his question and you have answered it, just wait until the next question. The witness then says, I was just trying to say that that is the only thing that bothered me. The court then says, all right, I thank you very much. If you want to say it with the answer. The witness then says, okay. The court says, thank you. Don't stop, then wait. All right, go ahead. The witness says, okay. Mr. Mosty then continues. Let's talk about June 5th, 4th, and 5th. You say you went by the house that day? Yes, sir, I did. Essentially to pick up your mother? That was to take her and pick her up? Darley, I remember I went there on Wednesday. That was Wednesday. Yes, that was Wednesday on June 5th. Yes, it was. You didn't take your mother both days? No, Darley took mother home on Tuesday. Who took her over there on Tuesday? I took her over there. You took your mother over Tuesday? Yes. Darley brought her home? Yes. You took your mother over Wednesday? Yes. And you picked her up? Yes, I have. Now, Tuesday morning, you didn't have any conversations with Darley? No, sir. I waited for Darren outside. Okay. And on the second day, you didn't have any conversations in the morning with anyone? No, I haven't. I just dropped my mother off. Okay. And that afternoon, you went in and had a conversation. That is when you say you drank a beer? Yes. And what was Darley doing while that was going on? She was upset and she was pacing back and forth that when I came in, both my mother and Darley were upset. But when I walk in, I said, wow, everything looks so nice. And they say, yeah, we did a lot of work. We done all the laundry. And there was laundry on the counter that Darley had to bring it upstairs yet. They were clean. Now, and you say she was pacing? Yes. She seemed like she was walking back and forth, but I don't exactly know what she was doing. She was upset. Where were you? I was in the kitchen. Standing? Yes. What part of the kitchen? By the island, you call it? Okay, the big thing in the middle of the kitchen. On the opposite side from the sink? I was on both sides, really. Okay, and you were moving around? A little bit, yes. I kind of tried to follow Darley. I am looking at her. I said, what's going on? I said, both of them are upset, but I'm not going to ask. Where was your mother? In the kitchen. In the kitchen? Ready to go. Yes. Where was Darley doing this pacing? Pardon me? Where was she doing this pacing? She was going back from the kitchen and to the family room, and then she went on the other way. In the what? Well, she paced. I see her going. She is like carrying maybe something. She is like hearing maybe something? Pardon me? Did you say she's like hearing something? Carrying something. Carrying? Yeah, but I don't know what. She is walking from the kitchen into the family room, and then she went the other direction, kind of hallway through, and I am staring at the fireplace. And she was carrying things between the rooms? Well, she had something in her hand, but I didn't pay attention to what it was. You don't recall what it was? No, sir. Well, when you pace back and forth in an upset area, do you take things from room to room? Well, not necessarily. But she could have been walking, just taking something from the kitchen to the family room? I don't know. She just walked through there and stuff, and my mother was after me. Come on, I want to go home. But you don't recall what she had in her hand? No, sir. Did she go other places other than from the family room to the kitchen, walk other places? I don't know. I am looking at the fireplace and I have my mama upset by me. And I said, what's going on? I said, is Darlie upset? Okay. You are standing in the kitchen? Yes, sir. Looking at the fireplace? Yes. And not really paying attention to what Darlie is doing? No, I am looking at her. And I said, something is going on. She is upset. So you looked at the fireplace? And Mama is standing by me and is making me nervous, saying, come on, come on. And I said, no, I'm going to relax for a minute and then we're going to go. Okay. But you were standing up? Yes, I have. And you were looking at the fireplace? Yes, I love to look at fireplaces. Was there a fire in it? No, sir. It was June, wasn't it? Yes, I just look at the fireplace. You just like looking at it. Okay. And Darlie was carrying things back and forth from the kitchen to the family room? She was walking back and forth. I'm not really paying attention no more. I says, okay, I'm not going to ask, but we did say something, but I don't quite recall what it was. What about other rooms? Did she go in other rooms? I don't know. She disappears for a little bit. Walked in, then she comes back. Did she go upstairs? I believe there was something on the stove cooking. Yeah, she was cooking supper, wasn't she? Yes, she was. And so while you are saying she is pacing, she is cooking supper, she is taking things to the family room, the pot is simmering, something is simmering in the pot. And doesn't she go over and check it? No. She never, no, I went over there and said, smells good. You were checking the supper while Darlie was pacing? Nobody is checking it. It is simmering. Something is simmering in the pot. And I just looked and said it looked good. What was for supper? Some kind of chicken soup type of stew type of deal she was making. It smelled really good. And how long did this pacing go on? Well, I didn't stick around too long to know. I know she was upset. Mama is upset. I said, okay, it's time to go. A minute or two? Well, she is walking back and forth. She never sits down really and have a conversation or anything. You never sat down? No. You stood up and drank your beer and walked around. Didn't you? A little bit. I kind of looked, you know, where she is going. She is going to the family room, and then she went the other way, and Mama is at me, so I'm like, hold on, we're going to leave soon. We left shortly after I finished the beer. We left. And you don't recall anything that you and Darlie said in that time? Or did you say anything? I'm sorry. We maybe said something, but I really don't remember. I was just like, what's going on? Both women are upset. I didn't know what was going on. Well, I kind of knew Darlie was upset because I talked to Darren before he went to pick up to move the Jaguar. We're not going to go into what Darren said, okay? I am just wanting you to describe what you saw, okay? Can you give me any estimate of how long you were in the house that day? We maybe left about 5:45. Okay, well, what time did you get there? About 5:45. So you were there half an hour, you think? Maybe not even that. I really don't know. And during that entire time, Darlie was pacing like this? Yes, she looks upset. And she's going, then, you know, she left. I don't see her, and Mama is at me again. Okay. Now, you went out the front door? Yes, I have. And when you got outside, you saw a black car? No, I didn't see a black car. When did you see the black car? It passed me by. I was driving. Which way were you heading? I was going towards Linda Vista, south on Linda Vista. Did you see that the car was stopped when you first saw it? No, sir. You didn't see it when it was first stopped? No, sir, I did not. Your mother told you she saw it stopped, didn't she? I don't remember. You don't recall that? I just saw that car driving by fast. You don't recall seeing a man get in that car? I didn't. You don't recall a Hispanic male? No, I didn't see the male. How many people were in the car? I didn't see how many people was in the car. You don't know? No, I only saw back of the car. You thought that car was suspicious, didn't you? No, I told mother to, pardon my language, quit freaking out, mama. There's a lot of black people living in this neighborhood. A lot of what? Black people, because she said, who is that black man when he passed us? And I said, what man? And she said, that man in the black car. And so I looked and I only saw the back of the car. I didn't see no man. And your mother told you that that was the same car that she had seen the day before at the Routiers? We gave a statement to police. I don't really remember how it was, but there was a man in the back alley in a black car. A man in the back alley in a black car. In the back alley. In the back alley when she was in the garage. And that is your mother telling you this? Yes. That is the day before while she was working? That was on, I don't really remember, sir. Well, it was the earlier day she was working, whatever day that was. Right. But she saw, yes, she did see a black car in a back alley. And she, when he passed us by really fast, or a black car passed us by, she said she saw the black car in the back alley. When she was in the garage, he was like sitting and like waiting for somebody, but he was looking into the garage. Like he was watching the house? That's what your mother told you, wasn't it? Something like that, yes. That it was somebody who was suspicious in the back alley looking in the garage? Well, what was the exact word is? What was he? I don't recall, but something not suspicious. It was more of, who is that black man and what is he doing in this neighborhood? She thought black people don't have nice neighborhoods. Okay. So she had seen another black, she seen a black car in the back alley, and a man was sitting there like he was waiting for somebody and like he was looking in the garage. And he was looking in the garage, yes. The Routier garage? Yes. And that was the day before you and your mother saw, or the day before, 2 days before you and your mother saw this black car? I only saw that one time when he passed us by. That's right. But that is when your mother said, that is the same car that I saw earlier in the alley? Yes, yes. That is what she told you? Yes. Now, speaking of that, and that is what you told the police, isn't it? Well, I only told them what I saw, and I tried to help translate, Mama, what she saw. And she was there with you at this time? Yes, she was. And that is what she told the police? Yes, she was. Okay. And you also told the police at that same time that you were not aware of any problems between Darren and Darley, didn't you? Well, I lied to the police, sir. That your statement is that when you told the police that the police asked, excuse me, let me finish my question. I'm sorry. Your statement is that when you told the police that you were not aware of any problems between Darlie and Darren that you were lying to the police? No. The police asked me if I saw any violence in the house, and I told them no. And the police officer, if he wrote down that Barbara didn't know of any problems between Darren and Darlie, that is wrong? Yes, that was wrong. I was very tired. I had not hardly slept. I didn't want to go to the police station at first. I called them and I told them, the police, that I could see them later because I just wanted to see Darlie and I wanted to get to the cemetery. Well, this is on, and I just wanted to tell them about that black car, and I didn't want to say to the police that Darlie and Darren had problems. Well, you have already told us that they had a good marriage. Yeah, but they had problems too. Well, have you seen a marriage yet that doesn't have problems? Yes, but lately, well, it's been constant kind of fighting. You had problems in your marriages, haven't you? Yes, sir, but I never had that kind of constant fighting. Well, how many divorces have you had? Well, I had two, sir. Okay. And Darlie and Darren haven't had one, have they? No. Okay. Now, is it your statement that you lied to the police officers on June 8th when you told them that Darren and Darlie did not have problems? Yes, I have. I lied. I was too emotional to... I didn't feel at that time that it's any of their business about it. I just wanted out of there. I just wanted to tell about that black car, and I didn't want to say that Darlie and Darren had problems. And over the last 6 or 7 months, that is what you said back then. And over the last 6 or 7 months, you started telling this other story. Now? What other story? The one you're telling us today. I didn't want to go to the police station, okay? Dana, her sister, volunteered me to go there. And that was because of the black car, wasn't it? Right, to tell about the black car. And you were suspicious of that black car, weren't you? I was not. You were not? I just told them what Mother saw and what I saw pass me by. Your mother was suspicious of that black car? But when Mother... Mr. Toby Shook then says, Judge, I'll object. These questions have all been asked and answered. The court says, I'll sustain the objection. Let's move on. Wait for the next question. Mr. Richard Mosty then continues his questioning and says, tell me the day, as best you can, of when you had this conversation with Darlie about what you described as her telling you about getting pills out. When was that? Pardon me? When was the conversation you had with Darlie about the pills? She came in and she came into the shop and she said that she is going to go see Dr. Jensen. I don't exactly remember when she went or anything, but she goes back because she went on those pills once because she went to a different doctor. You are talking about the diet pills now? Yes. Excuse me. I'm talking about the conversation that you said when she was going to take some pills. Oh, that must have occurred when I was on my vacation. You were on vacation? Yes, because when I came back home from vacation, that is when I found this out. When did you have the conversation with Darlie? I went to Darlie shortly after I arrived. I was concerned after talking with my daughter and then Darren telling me, I got upset. I don't exactly remember which day, but we were slow at work again. I stayed on my vacation longer because Darren told me not to rush. Mr. Mosty says, excuse me, Your Honor, may we approach the bench? The court then says, you may. And at this point, a short discussion was held off the record, and then proceedings were resumed. And the court then says, Ma'am, whenever a question is asked, if you could just answer it as briefly as possible, just precisely what they ask you, okay? The witness then says, okay. The court says, thank you. If they want to know anything else, they will ask you, okay? The witness says, I'm doing something wrong. The court says, you are doing nothing wrong. Just answer the question that is asked, okay? The witness says, okay, thank you. The court says, you're doing fine. Go ahead. Mr. Mosty at this point says, where did your conversation with Darley take place? Sometime after I came back from my vacation. Where was the question? About the pills? At her home. Where in her house? In the kitchen. Who was there? Only Darley and I and the children. Damon was upstairs and the baby was on the floor. And what was Darley doing? We were, at that time, we were standing together by the island and talking. Well, when you got there, what was she doing? She was in the kitchen. Doing what? I don't remember. Okay. So you went in the kitchen? Yeah, I went over there. Okay. Tell me the first thing you said. Well, what I want to know, how this conversation developed and how you got around to talking about this. So who initiated it and how did this conversation get going? I asked her how she was doing and she said, fine. And I said, okay. And then she turned around to me and she told me, have you heard what happened? Now, wait a minute. I want to make sure that I'm understanding this exactly. Okay. You say, how are you doing? Yes. She says, fine. And then she starts telling you about the pills? No, sir. She told me, did you hear what happened? And at the time, I didn't tell Darley that I have heard from my daughter and Darren because she gets upset when somebody... And then what did... Mr. Toby Shook then says, Judge, we will object. She has not finished answering the question. The court then says, yes, finish your answer, ma'am. Mr. Mosty says, well, excuse me, Your Honor, but I thought that's all. The court then says, well, she says she gets upset. You were cutting her off in the middle of the sentence. Mr. Mosty says, well, that gets upset was not near the question I was asking. It was who said what. The court then says, thank you. She was giving the answer. Finish your answer, ma'am. The witness then says, Darley told me that I heard what happened and I lied to her, telling her that I didn't know what happened. And I said, what? And she said, well, Basha, I was just going to do it. And I said, do what? And she said she was going to take her life. Mr. Mosty then says, is that how she said it? I can't tell you word for word. Best you can, what words did she, but to the best of my knowledge, that she was going to take her life away, and she had already taken pills out of wrappers. She had them upstairs. She was upstairs. She was, excuse me, Miss Javel. What I would like for you to try to do is say it as if she were saying it, like saying, I was doing this. That is what I'm asking you. What were the exact words, as best as you can tell me, in her own words? I will try, but, and maybe it's easier if we go through it about who said something next. We won't go through the whole thing at once. We will go through it so that we can get it down as it happened. All right? All right. Now, she said something about, I had them out of the wrappers or something. Tell me how she said that, as best you recall. She said that she was upstairs. She had all the pills out of the wrappers or out of the wrappers. All the pills out of the wrappers? Yes. What kind of wrappers? I have no idea. She didn't describe the wrappers to you? No, sir. Like she had opened a bag? No, only wrappers. She didn't say anything about pill bottles, did she? No, she said wrappers? Wrappers, okay. Now then, what did she say? She said that she had all the pills ready and she was writing a note, and that if Darren wouldn't come in, she would have took the pills. But she heard Darren come in and she put the pills away. She quickly, because he was coming up, threw the wrappers underneath the bed. Did she tell you where she put the pills? No, just put them away? She hid them away. Okay. She didn't say whether or not she put them in the wrappers or out of the wrappers. No, she just said that she put them away and she shoved the wrappers under the bed and she hid everything. And when Darren came in, Darren would not have known until the dog started playing with the wrappers and took them from under the bed. When did the dog come in? Well, she told me about it. Domain, the dog, was playing around with those wrappers underneath the bed and he took them out from under the bed. And this was right after Darren. And that is when Darren saw the wrappers. Okay. Did Darren come in the room, actually? She said he came in. Okay. So she threw the wrappers under the bed. Darren came in. Under the bed. Under the bed. Darren came in and then the dog came in. The dog stays upstairs most of the time. But the dog went under the bed and he brought out the wrappers? Yes. And so Darren caught her right then? Darren saw the wrappers, and that's when I told Darlie, I said, Darlie, well, go ahead with your question. But all this, it was described to you as all of this happening just right after another in their bedroom? That is what I was told. Now, let's talk about this film that we saw. Yes, that was on June 14th. June 14th, which was Devin's birthday. Devin's birthday, yes. And you say you were invited out there? Yes, I was. Do you know whose idea it was to bring that silly string out? Silly, whatever it's called. Out there? Yes, silly string. Silly string out there? Yes. That was her sister's idea? That wasn't Darlie's idea, was it? She discussed it with Darlie, and she said, and that is what they were going to do. But the sister had brought that out, hadn't she? She told me about it, that that is what they were going to plan. And were you there for the, were you there when the Baptist ministers were there? What Baptist ministers? You don't know about that? There was no Baptist ministers in that cemetery. You don't know about the prayer service that had been held right before that? Yes, it had been mentioned by Mama Darlie and the family that was going to leave. Yes, I remember that. Yes, that was apparently something that Mama Darlie and the family that was going to leave, and they went back to the cemetery. But I don't know anything about ministers. You weren't there? No. When the Baptist ministers led them in prayer at the gravesite? No, sir, I was not. Do people in Poland have different customs and different reactions to funerals than in America? Yes, sir. Very much so? Well, not that much. That was different. Well, I'm talking about just in general. Do Polish people celebrate their customs of funerals different than we do in America? Well, we normally will go to the cemetery for the performance. There will be long prayers. You're Catholic, aren't you? A Roman Catholic, yes. And do you go, or do you know people who go on birthdays to gravesites and talk to their husband or wife or whomever their loved one is? Yes, yes. That is not uncommon, is it? Maybe not. I personally haven't done it. But we normally go really for the, how do you say in English, when we celebrate all of the dead people. Is that a wake? No, I don't know how to say it in English. That's Irish, I believe. No, sir, it's once a year, a big celebration that we go, and we all go to the cemetery and we put out candles all over the graves and we pray. All Souls Day? Yeah, that type of celebration. It's here too, but I forgot the name of it. Different religions do that differently, don't they? Well, I don't know about other religions. Okay. And during that time, out there at the cemetery, there were times when you hugged various people, weren't there? What cemetery? The film we saw? Oh, yeah. The birthday party? Yes. You hugged some people? Yes. You cried some? We tried not to cry. Well, I tried not to cry. Okay, and you laughed some? We smiled some. Not really. I didn't really laugh. You didn't joke around? I smiled a little bit and what you saw, really. You didn't joke around some? Are you sure about that? Joke about what? Joke about anything? No, sir. You are certain. If I did, I don't remember joking about anything. Well, there were pictures of Darlie there crying, weren't there? I didn't see Darlie cry. You never saw Darlie cry at that whole time at that birthday party? I didn't. Did you see her wipe away a tear? No. Never did? No, sir. Did you see the film? That moment on the film, her head was down. She was faking wiping away a tear? I didn't see a tear. Did you see her walk around with pictures of her babies in her arms? Yes, I have. She had those in her arms a lot, didn't she? No, only when the cameraman came. Oh, that is just when the cameraman came, is when she picked up those and put them there. Yes, sir. Okay. Do you remember them talking about how thankful they were that Drake was still there? Yes, she said that they were thankful. Mr. Mosty then says, Your Honor, this is maybe a time when we need to take up a matter. The court then says, All right, if the jury will step outside, please take a 10-minute break now, please. The court then says, All right, at this point, the jury is excused from the courtroom and the proceedings were held in the presence of the defendant with her attorney, but outside the presence of the jury. And this is what happened. The court then says, May the record reflect that all parties of the trial are present and these proceedings are being held outside of the presence of the jury. Mr. Mosty. Mr. Mosty then says, Your Honor, what we're going to go into, and I can either go through the whole thing or I can tell you in general, and then the court then says, Well, let's just generalize it first and then we will go through it. Mr. Mosty then says, Okay, Mr. Hagler, another member of Darlie's defense team, suggested perhaps that I talk too loud and that the jury might hear me. So if the court can't hear me, let me know. I'll try to talk a little bit lower. The court then says, That will be fine. Mr. Mosty says, What we are going to propose to go into at this time, in a nutshell, Mrs. Jovell's psychiatric history, various commitments, various times that she has been in and out of insane asylums and into some of her background and her experience with depression and her own relationships, at which are all relevant about what she is talking about, that she's counseled Mrs. Routier on psychiatric, psychological matters, and so forth. And so we're going to go in to show that. And so a substantial part of this is in the Baylor medical records when she was in there. And a lot of the background in there of what her history is and describe what her history is that she described. The court then says, perhaps she could summarize it. And if you need to ask more questions, you might for the purpose of this hearing. Mr. Toby Shook then says, Well, Judge, What time frame are you talking about? Mr. Mosty then says, well, we're going to pull it right on up to date. It's going to go from 96 backwards, though, you know, she is the first time she was ever committed or hospitalized in an insane asylum was she was or her first bout of depression when she was 16. The first time she was in the hospital, she was 22. She was 22 years old. She was in 89, you know, and we're going to bring up that whole history of that, of her when she is sitting there counseling Mrs. Routier, what her background is and what her story, her history is a fundamental part of that. Mr. Toby Shook then says, excuse me, is 89 the last year you have there? Mr. Mosty then says, that is the last hospitalization I have got that I have got. Mr. Shook then says, Judge, obviously, we would object then. There is no relevance to that in 1989 about some stay in the hospital. It's completely irrelevant. It's only being tried to be introduced to dirty this witness up in irrelevant matters. The court then says, overruled, I'll let them do it. Go ahead. Mr. Shook then says, well, the court says, but if we could sort of, could you ask a summation question and get it for the purpose of this hearing? Mr. Mulder then says, kind of tell us about all the times that you have been in an insane asylum or something like that. Mr. Mosty then says, well, you know, the medical records, as you might suspect, are replete with things that she said. So I will try to move quickly through it. The court then says, all right, thank you. Mr. Mosty says that is it. The court says, go ahead. And Mr. Mosty then says, you want me to go through all this now? And the court says, well, can I see them real quickly? Mr. Mosty says, sure. These are the Baylor records. The court says, okay. Mr. Mosty then says, and we will offer the whole record in two. The court says, okay. Mr. Mosty says, but then I want to talk to her about some specifics. And the court says, let's break and let me review these and then we will look at them. Mr. Mosty says, all right. The court says, if you will step down, please, ma'am. Thank you. Court says, all right. And at this point, a recess is taken. And then after a short time, proceedings were resumed in the presence and hearing of the defendant and her attorneys. Of course, the jury is still not in the room at this point in time. And the judge says, all right, everyone, please have a seat. All right, let's continue. Let the record reflect that these proceedings are being held outside the presence of the jury and that all parties of the trial are present. Mr. Mosty, if you will develop what you wish to on the hearing outside of the presence of the jury, please. Mr. Mosty then says and starts to question the witness, Ms. Jovell. And he says, Ms. Jovell, and I think you have described this time that you gave Darley the advice about getting help. That was in May of 1996. Is that right? Yes. And you were counseling with her? Pretty much. I told her to please get help. And your opinion was that she was suffering from depression? Yes. That was your opinion? Yes. And you thought she needed to go see a doctor? Yes. Did you give her the name of a doctor? No, I haven't, because she told me that they are going to go to Lubbock and do that anyways. Okay. Who were you seeking counseling with at that time? And who were you in counseling with? Nobody. Nobody? What about, did you go to an acupuncturist? Oh, yes. Is that for psychological and psychiatric? No, sir, that was for my back. For your back? Yes. What doctors were you seeing at that time? I only went to see for my back, that doctor. When was it that Well, let's go back the other way. When have you, after Baylor, we will get to Baylor in a minute. Yes. But after Baylor, what psychologists, counselors, and psychiatrists have you seen? I went back to my MD and I told him what she had said to me, and I didn't agree with that at that time. And I went back to my MD. Okay. They have been keeping with me. So actually, and I remember that because even before you went into Baylor, you had been with your MD, your doctor. Yes. And he had been giving you some pills for depression, had he not? Yes. And then you went to Baylor and then you went back to that same doctor? Yes. What is his name? Dr. Niamatali. Actually, he is the one who has been continuing to give you, the court then says, would you inquire as to the first name of the doctor, please? The witness then says, Hobby Niamatali. The court says, Hobby. The witness says, it's an Indian name, I think. The court says, can you spell it for us, please, ma'am? And she says, I don't know. I'm sorry. He is in Garland. And the court says, all right. And Mr. Mosty then continues, all right. And then that is the doctor you went to before you went to Baylor? Yes. And that is the doctor you went to after you went to Baylor? Yes. And that is the doctor that you have continued to see? No, I quit continue seeing that doctor. When did you quit seeing him? Because I didn't need no more help. When did you quit seeing him? Shortly after, no, maybe, I maybe saw him, I don't really recall, but I went there for, oh, I don't know, really, 4 more visits to be on the safe side. Okay, and what medications have you continued to take for depression? I don't remember, sir. What are you taking now? The name of it? No, sir, I don't. Are you taking anything now? No, sir, I don't. When this whole thing started, I was very emotional. I went to my acupuncture doctor, and that helps me to relax. Okay, so you were upset and you were emotional, and you went to your acupuncturist to when the events took place, when all this happened. So you went to your acupuncturist because you were under stress and you were not feeling well mentally? No, sir, I was grieving for the boys. That is a mental condition, isn't it? I don't know what you can call it, but I was, whatever it is, it's an emotion. It's something in your mind. Well, yes, it's an emotion. It's a very painful emotion. You were treated by your acupuncturist for that? Yes, because it helps me to relax because I couldn't sleep and I cried a lot. That is to get over the emotional, to help me to get to sleep and not to be so, well, yes, I was very hurt. What have you done over the years for depression since Baylor? I didn't have to, sir. Not a thing? Not a thing. You have not taken any drugs at all? Not a pill one. You have not had a depressed state since then? No. No, sir. In your counseling with Darlie Routier, did you call on some of your background and your experiences at Baylor? Not at Baylor. I tried to tell her that when I had my daughter, I had a postpartum depression when my child was born. I had postpartum depression and I tried to take my life away. Okay. And all of that was part of when you were talking to Darlie. Part of what you were trying to do was to relate your life's experiences to her, were you not? Because I see the difference, more or less, telling her after what happened to me after I had baby. All right, so you were taking your past, the one where you were hospitalized for postpartum depression, that was not at Baylor, was it? That was at a previous hospitalization? Yes, when I had my daughter. So you took these two. How many times have you been hospitalized? Twice. In some kind of psychiatric or psychological hospital? Twice? Twice. And you took those life experiences, and they were part of why you wanted to discuss getting help with Darlie, weren't they? Pretty much so, seeing her behavior. Because you, in your background and in your makeup, you had that, and so you wanted to share that with Darlie. Well, she had known that. I have told her that before. But that was part of your recommendation of visiting with her about getting help and suicide note? No, I went there because I want to make sure that Darren didn't lie to me about getting help for Darlie. But my question is, that part of what you were counseling her about, I didn't counsel her. You didn't counsel her? No, I just told her, let me take that back. Your advice, the court then says, let her answer the question, please. Go ahead and answer the question. The witness then says, it's not counseling. I was very concerned about her. Yes. Mr. Mosty then says, I'll take the word counseling back. Your advice to her. Yes. Part of your advice was based upon your own previous hospitalizations and your own previous mental problems? Pretty much so. And you were recommending that she take the course you took? Yes. Now, let's talk then about some of your depression when you were admitted to Baylor. You told them at that time that your depression was so bad that you could not function? Yes, sir. And that was your second time in the hospital? Yes, sir. But your first episode with depression was when you were 16? I was 16, yes. And when you were 16, you were dysfunctional for a year, weren't you? No. Do you remember telling them at Baylor that at the age of 16, you stayed home from school the whole year? No, that is when I had my accident. She must have misunderstood me. Isolating and doing absolutely nothing except sleeping all the time? I slept quite a bit, I remember, yes. That was the summertime, and I prefer sleeping. So this statement in the Baylor medical records is wrong? Well, I don't know how she put it down on the paper, but I remember being in my 16 through the summertime, I felt depressed. I more or less wanted to stay home and just sleep and don't go nowhere. Okay. Do you agree with this statement that you told Baylor that your first episode with depression was at the age of 16 when she stayed at home from school the whole year, isolating and doing absolutely nothing except sleeping all the time? Did you tell Baylor that? Mr. Toby Shook then says, Judge, could we get to a specific time when this statement was supposed to have been made and to who? The court says, that's sustained. I would like that. If you could get the dates and times. Mr. Mosty then says, your date of admission to Baylor was October 15th of 1989? Somewhere, yes. Okay, but this incident that you're describing was many, many years before? No, the same incident. How old were you when you went to Baylor in 89? I don't know, 35 maybe? 35, maybe. So when you told Baylor about your depression at age 16, you had been describing something that happened 19 years before? Well, I have told her that I could go over with her and go ahead and tell her what happened to me, but I already had that behind me. There was something else that occurred at that time that I want to go into. By that time, you said 19 years ago you had that behind you, but now you are back at Baylor? Well, what have happened? Well, yes, sir, but there were some different reasons that I went back to Baylor. Well, at 16, it was a depression when you stayed home for the whole year, was it not? I didn't really stay the whole year. I don't know why she put that down. Well, whatever it was, you were 16 years old. That was summertime, and I felt depressed, yes, and I didn't get out nowhere. I just wanted to stay home and sleep. The court then says, the court understands what happened here. If we could move on to the next time frame, please. Mr. Mosty then says, at 16, however, you were not hospitalized, were you? No, no, sir. And then the first time you were hospitalized, you were 22 when I had my daughter. Okay. And that is not the daughter that you have now? Yes, I have a daughter. Mr. Shook then says, Judge, I'll object to him asking for a history. If he is going to go for statements made in the records, we will just ask that the question be limited that way. He is going to ask her from the records. Mr. Mosty then says, that's what I'm trying to do. The court then says, well, I think that is what he is trying to do. The main thing, we understand that apparently there has been some treatment for depression. If we could just go through the dates in chronological order, please, for the purposes of this hearing. Mr. Mosty then continues his questioning. So then you were hospitalized at age 22. What year would that have been? 1977. 77. Okay. You were hospitalized at that time for about 3 weeks. Is that right? Yes. And do you say at that time was your complaint that you had had symptoms of depression for the previous 9 months? Mr. Shook then says, Judge, again, I'll object as to who the statement is made to and when it's made. Mr. Mosty then says, all right, I'll clarify that. The court says, okay. Mr. Mosty continues, the series of questions that I am asking about now are the history that you gave to Baylor in October of 1989, correct? Do you understand? Mr. Shook said, to who? The witness says, Dr. Lynn Markle. The court says, can you read? Mr. Mosty says, Dr. Ray Lynn Markle, MD. The court says, let's get all of that on the record and move on. Mr. Mosty says, I'm trying. The court says, well, if you could do it. The court has already reviewed those records briefly. I understand the doctor's name. If we could get the doctor's name in the chronological order, please. Mr. Mosty continues, the conversations that I am talking about until I tell you differently are your history that you gave to Dr. Markle in October of 1989. All right? Yes. Okay. At that time, you told, we've already been over the 16, and now we're talking about the 22. When you were 22 years old and you had been hospitalized, where was the hospitalization? That was in Boston, Massachusetts. Do you remember the name of the hospital? No, sir. And you told Dr. Markle that prior to that hospitalization, that you had been depressed for about 9 months. Do you remember? No, sir. You don't recall that? No, sir. Do you remember telling Dr. Markle at that time that you would take various antidepressants from your MD and that once you got to feeling better, you would stop taking them? Yeah, I didn't need them no more. Okay, so you would be on them. No, I'm sorry. I told Dr. Lynn Markle, I committed myself to Dr. Lynn Markle on voluntary. I went there by myself because my doctor told me that I'd better go and see maybe if they would give me different medications. So I went in on my own to the hospital telling them to help me. And she was supposed to just make sure that a certain dosage of medication was given to me. And she did. Okay. At this time, in May of 1996, when you had that conversation with Darlie and you were talking to her, would you consider Darlie your best friend at that time? Yes, sir. Did you make the statement to the Dr. Markle as follows? Quote, she describes increasing symptoms of depression over the past 9 months, stating that her local medical doctor has been giving her medication and urging her to go to the hospital, as has her best friend, unquote. Did you make that statement to Dr. Markle? As what? That, oh, no, no, my best friend. I had a friend named Gail. The court then says, what is the time frame for this? Mr. Mosty says October. Well, she is describing this October of 1989 to Dr. Markle. She is describing the hospitalization that was earlier. The court says, I'm aware of that. Now, can we move on to the other hospitalizations subsequent to that, please, so we can get this in context? Are there any subsequent to that? Mr. Mosty says, any subsequent hospitalizations? I've got the two hospitalizations. Now, I'm going over what she said at Baylor and what her complaints were at Baylor. The court says, in 1989? Mr. Mosty says, in 1989. And the court says, all right. Mr. Mosty then continues with the questioning. Did you tell Dr. Markle at that time that in 89 that you had the inability to tolerate crowds or be around people? Yes. And that you would have to frequently leave and become easily agitated? Yes, sir. And did you describe that you became violent if people tried to calm you down? Yes, sir. Not people, close friends. And you described crying spells all the time? I would get angry, yes, very easily, and then depressed very easily. Now, these are things that you are describing that are happening in 1989, correct? Yes, sir. And in 1989, you were describing feelings of hopelessness, feels empty, no energy? Yes. Normal interests hold nothing for her? Yes, sir. That you cannot stop eating and had gained 40 pounds? Yes, sir. That your personal hygiene was very poor? What is a hygiene? That you didn't take care of yourself and clean yourself and brush your hair? Well, like I say, I didn't care if I put my hair up or not, but yes, I cleaned myself, sir. And you told Dr. Markle that if it were not for your 12-year-old daughter, that you would just not bother to go on. Yes, sir. And you are expressing, the court then says, Mr. Mosty, I understand. We have had a voluntary commitment in 1989. What is relevance of this to now? Mr. Mosty says, the point of this is a bill of exception, Your Honor. The court says, well, I think the court understands satisfactorily what happened. Mr. Mosty says, well, the essential part of it is that here is a lady who has a history of depression, who is now becoming an advisor slash counselor to, quote, her best friend. And, you know, it goes to show about these conversations about suicide and these conversations. Did they arise in the mind of Miss Jovell or did they arise in the mind of Mrs. Routier? Who initiated them? Who did them? Who said them? Who brought them out? And this is a lady, and I will go on later, who hears voices. And so we are trying to develop, where did these things begin? The witness says, I have told Darley. The court says, quiet, ma'am. The witness says, I'm sorry. Court says, I understand that. I'll let you do it. Be brief and to the point, please. Mr. Mosty then continues his questioning. When did you quit hearing voices? And do you hear people calling your name now? Pardon me? Do you hear voices still? I don't hear voices. Never have? No, I don't recall telling her that. Okay, let me go on. I will try to move along. Did you, at that time, did you tell Dr. Markle in 1989 that you think you hear, that she thinks she hears her name called a lot? No. And you didn't say that that had been going on for years? No, sir. Do you recall that at that time in 1989 that you described yourself and were described as very controlling or histrionic. Controlling? Do you remember that? No, sir. Okay, do you remember describing? Mr. Toby Shook then says, Judge, if I could get a little bit of clarification, are these quotes to a doctor or is this a doctor's summary? Mr. Mosty says, it's some of each. Some are observations and some are... Mr. Shook then says, because it sounds like a summary, that's not proper impeachment, Judge. Mr. Mosty says, this is not impeachment. This is a bill of exception. The court says, let's continue, and I want you to be brief. I understand that, and I have read that. If you can just be brief and to the point, please. Mr. Mosty then continues his questioning. Did you describe in 1989 to Dr. Markle that you felt like you had manic depression illness? That is what my Dr. Niamatoli told me, that I could have that. Is manic depression something you get over? Pretty much so, if nothing tragic happens through your life, or you can control it pretty nice by doing long walks. That is what helped me, brief, long walks, swimming a lot. Those are the things that you are doing right now to control manic depression? Yes, we do walk 6 miles. Well, when I get frustrated, I go for a long walk. So even now, when you see signs of depression or manic depression come along, I can control it. You take action to control that depression, but I don't get depressed. Then why are you taking long walks? I get frustrated sometimes. You work hard. The court then says, thank you. Next question. Mr. Mosty then continues. Did Dr. Markle go over a discharge summary with you? Pardon me? Did Dr. Markle go over a discharge summary with you, talk to you about your discharge from Baylor in November of 1986? I don't remember. Okay. She put me on medication. She told me to go. Do you remember telling Dr. Markle that you described hallucinatory experiences, hearing your name called a lot? I don't remember saying that. Do you recall describing pains in your head, sharp pains in your head? Yes, I had that, but that is because I was beat up. I still have them sometimes. Still got that now? Sometimes I get a sharp pain in my temples. Do you remember your psychological testing showed you to be infantile, histrionic, lacking an inner core of perceptions of self and others, and strong feelings of help, hopelessness, and helplessness? At that time, yes. I went for help. Do you remember describing your mother as a psychic? Psychic? A psychic? No. Were you also hospitalized in 1979 for a suicide attempt? No. Were you OD'd on Tylenol and Anison, Massachusetts Hospital? That was that time after I had my daughter. And you actually tried suicide? Well, I believe I did. With pills? Yes, sir. And that was part of the reason that you wanted to give Darlie Routier advice and counseling, wasn't it? Is that right? Pardon me? That was one of the reasons. You wanted to give Darlie Routier advice because you had attempted suicide after you had a child. That is what frightened me, her trying to commit suicide and the way she was acting. She was depressed and she was angry. She would come to the shop really angry, throwing things at Darren. I just wanted to help. Darlie wasn't herself. Okay. And your background from when you were attempting suicide was part of what you were trying to relate to her? I see, I see. Yes. Do you remember admitting to blocking out things in your memory? No, sir. Do you remember describing your mother as physically and verbally abusive to you? No. And that I told her that an American way, though, the American people would think that there is abuse. But we got good hard spankings with belts. I'm talking about what you described to Baylor. No, that is the way she put it in the paper. American way, that probably would be abuse, because here when you take a belt to a child or you hit a child, it's abuse called. So I said, quote, in America, you would consider that abuse. My question is simply this. Did you describe to the registered nurse on December 16th, 1989, that you remembered your mother as physically and verbally abusive? Yes, she'll call names, but she'll use a belt. I mean, she wasn't abusive. Like, what I am asking you is, did you tell these things to Baylor? No, I didn't tell exactly that. No, sir. You did not say those words? My mother wasn't abusive. If American people look at abusive, in Poland, that was a good hard spanking with a belt. Do you remember telling that same nurse that you were afraid of your father? My father? No, sir. And describing, actually on two occasions, describing your mother as both physically and verbally abusive on two separate occasions in the same interview, that is the way they put down on paper, but that is not what I told them. All right. Do you remember describing that you had occasional feelings of needle pricks on both sides of your head? My temples. On the temples, 3 or 4 times a day? That is because I was beat up. And that those were going on that had been going on for years? No, sir. You did not tell Baylor that? No, sir. The court then says, anything else? Mr. Mosty continues with his questioning. Ms. Javel, do you remember being interviewed by Carol Cloud? Yes, I have. Within the last couple of weeks? Yes, I have. Okay. You have hired a lawyer to represent you in this case, haven't you? Yes, I have. And that interview was conducted by Carol Cloud, who works for Mr. Mulder. You understand that, don't you? Yes, sir. But you had your lawyer present, didn't you? Yes. Do you remember describing to Mrs. Cloud in that interview several times that the statement, quote, I am afraid I'm losing my mind? Pardon me? Did you make that statement during that interview, not once, but several times, that you were afraid you were losing your mind in those words? No, I don't believe it. Well, of course you were there. Yes, and my lawyer was there too. Did you say that? Did you say that to Carol Cloud? No, sir. Did you tell Mrs. Cloud at that time that you did not believe that Darlie Routier was capable of these murders? I didn't say that. You did not say that either? I said I have questions. Did you discuss these mental problems with the district attorney's office? Yes, I have. And when was that? From the beginning. From the beginning? Yes. I guess you thought that was a matter of ongoing concern to you? Well, I didn't want to be here. And I told them that. Well, actually, it was started that Darren called my daughter, telling her that I am some effed up lady type of deal, that he is reading my records right now. And my daughter called me crying, saying, Mom, Darren said that. And so I contacted the DA's office, and I did tell them about it. Then I committed myself because I needed help. I had a hysterectomy. Shortly after, I was attacked and beat up really bad. And that is, should I continue? Did I ask you what medications you are presently on or have been on in the last few months? None. None? Natural herbs. I'm sorry, I do not take medication, but I do take natural herbs since this happened. I have been having a hard time sleeping. I cry a lot, and it's just for a type of stress. What natural herbs are those that you are taking? I don't have my purse with me. Dr. Bunzo It's all natural herbs. He only deals with natural herbs and needles. Natural herbs and needles. Well, he puts needles in your body. That is a different doctor than the one you told me about a minute ago. That's the Dr. Bunzo, the acupuncturist doctor. So he gives you herbs and needles. He only started doing this since this happened. Sometimes I don't need them and sometimes I do. Well, they really don't do anything, just kind of relax you a little bit. Have you told people that you can fly out of your body? I used to dream a lot that I was flying. Yes. Okay, well, that is more recent? No, sir. That was when I was 16, when I slept a lot. Oh, you have not told people more recently, within the last year, that you can fly out of your body? No, sir. Or sometimes think you can? I was dreaming that I was flying when I was 16. Yes, I remember that. I kind of enjoyed it, too. Mr. Mosty says, in terms of an offer of proof, Your Honor, I think that's what it is. And I would tell the court this, that because this is an offer of proof, I wouldn't cover a lot of this stuff, but I needed to do it for purposes of the record to make sure that my offer is complete. The court says, I understand. And Mr. Mosty continues, and as part of that, we would also offer to back up the statements or the statements in the history and the comments that I was pointing out. The court then says, the court will accept that entire document. So at this point, Mr. Mosty says, the entire amount of the Baylor records, which will be defendants 14, number 45. And these are admitted into the record. And then he says, and then I think Mr. Hagler would like to be heard on the offer. And Mr. Shook, of course, of the prosecution, says, Judge, we will object to the Baylor records for any reason on any part of the hearing because they have not been properly authenticated. The court says, well, I think he is just putting it on his bill of exception. Is that not so? Mr. Mosty says, that part is just to verify that for the record purposes, that is the document that I was referring to in these questions. Of course, we will, at the appropriate time, we will call the custodian from Baylor down here to back up those records. The court then says, all right, that exhibit is admitted for record purposes only. Yes, sir. Mr. Hagler then says, okay, Your Honor, the state has offered into evidence during the direct testimony of this witness testimony about this so-called attempted suicide. The purpose of this offer, and again, we would offer it and submit it to the court that all the testimony that presently has been offered is admissible for the jury. And specifically, Your Honor, this witness has testified that she has had numerous prior psychiatric problems and she has been committed on two occasions. She's been treated. She's certainly versed and knowledgeable on the area of depression and other forms of psychiatric disorders. She has also testified before the court that she has advised and counseled with the defendant regarding these certain difficulties and her prior experiences. Now, it is the purpose of our offer, Your Honor, of this testimony, that this would tend to show the state of mind of the defendant, you know, her actions and reactions to this advice and counsel made by this witness. Shorthanded, Your Honor, what we're saying is that the state has attempted to create the impression in front of the jury that this matter about the so-called suicide was completely, entirely independent of this witness and solely came from the mind of the defendant. This testimony is certainly probative and relevant to showing what the true source of this so-called suicide, what have you. Furthermore, the prior experiences of this witness parallel and almost virtually mirror what the state's contention is, that the defendant on her own independent impulse did as far as the suicide attempt. Furthermore, Admittedly, some of these things occurred within a number of years ago, Your Honor, but there is no remoteness rule as to the admissibility of this type of evidence. The fact of the matter is that it exists. She has independent recollection of these events, and regardless of the fact that some of them may have occurred anywhere from 7 to 8 years ago, the fact is that she related these incidences to the defendant, and we would submit created and caused a state of mind of the defendant as to her actions and reactions. And as far as the remoteness thing, I might also mention that as recently as this year, or I should say within the last 12 months, she has received acupuncture treatments due to her emotional problems. And certainly this would be admissible before the jury to show, to allow the jury to determine the true source and actions of the defendant. Mr. Mosty says, Your Honor, may I add one other thing? The court says you may. And he says, particularly related to the relevance aspect of it, and at the risk of getting called an amateur psychiatrist, this is what is known as projection. The court then says, okay. Mr. Mosty then says, and that is she in her mind, and we will go back to how I, whose mind did this originate in. She in her mind attempted suicide after having had a baby, actually attempted it. Didn't think about it, actually attempted it, and was hospitalized for it, and that life's experience projects into another, and she sees it in another that doesn't exist. So she sees depression in Darley. That is her projection of her life experiences, not those life experiences that she is actually observing. The court then says, anything else? All right. Well, the court holds that the testimony elicited by Mr. Mosty is not relevant to the witness's character for truthfulness or untruthfulness regarding her testimony in this case and will not be permitted before the jury. And you have made your bill of exception, and it will be noted and it will be put in the record. Mr. Mosty then says, Your Honor, let me make it clear. We're not offering that for purposes of demonstrating her truthfulness or untruthfulness. We're offering it to demonstrate her life experiences and how they relate to her testimony to impeach her version that these thoughts, that what she described as a depressed person, she was really describing herself. That is why we are offering it, not for truthfulness or untruthfulness. The court says overruled for that reason too. Thank you. Mr. Mosty then says, and may I also be afforded the opportunity to put a real psychiatrist other than myself in to describe that projection at the appropriate time? The court says, Mr. Mosty, you have leave to call any witness you want to call. Mr. Mosty says, all right, thank you. As part of this bill of exception, the court then says, yes, sir, a real psychiatrist, you know. We're happy to hear it. Mr. Mosty says, on this bill, are we still open on that subject? The court says, we're still open. Mr. Mosty says, thank you. Mr. Hagler then says, one final thing, Your Honor. Your ruling applies also to all the reasons that I stated. The court then says, oh, yes, by all means. All right. And as much as the jury took a break, I think we will take a quick 10-minute break. And then we will continue on, as we say in Texas, with this witness. And at this point, a brief recess for everybody that was involved in this portion is taken. The jury is still out of the room. And at this point, we are going to break. And we'll pick up with the rest of Barbara Jovell's testimony in the next episode.